Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Our panel begins right now, don't you know? The panel is great panel today. Wow. We really hit a home run. We have political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post. We have investigative reporter and professor Rosemary Armeo and associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Everybody awake? Ready for fun?
We are.
Good. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. You can email us your reckons. You can also comment on our webpage, wamc.org/roundtable. And just a reminder, from 11 o'clock this morning until noon, we will be airing an NPR news special about the Iran nuclear deal hosted by Steve Inskeep. It examines how this nuclear agreement came to be, the heated debate in Washington, and how the deal could play out in the Middle East as it goes through a period of historic upheaval. That's 11 o'clock this morning until noon, an NPR special. So we won't have the third hour of the roundtable today.
Oh, well.
Everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
All right.
It's a good topic.
It is a good topic, and it'll be a fine special, and we hope you all tune in. Before we start the panel today, we will welcome once again Felicia Burke, who is our membership director, with an update on the old WAMC lockbox. How are we doing?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah, that lockbox is creeping up. We are at $95,602.21. Mm. So closing in on $100,000.
That's right.
That's good a benchmark.
Math.
That's a nice
skills place. Are excellent.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, let's do a little more math. I did projection for the next 17 days, because let's say there's 17 days to the next fund drive. If we did exactly what we've been doing this week, we'd be at about $137,150,000 going into the fund drive.
Okay, now explain. This is all new to me. Explain right. How this whole lockbox thing works with regard to the fund drive.
All right. We have to make $1 million every fund drive.
This is like a play.
Yeah, right. Since when is this new to
this
you?
This is all new to me.
Shh, by the premise, by the gag. Anyway.
So we open up the lockbox early. I mean, we don't want to do a fundraising fatigue, but we want to get a little bit of a boost to shorten the fund drive.
Ah.
So we're enticing people to pledge early, pledge to the lockbox, and shorten the fund drive. Everything that gets pledged to now takes away from the million that we have to raise later.
Fantastic.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you get any of those goodies you get during the fund drive for making donations?
I'm so glad you asked.
Yes. Premiums for those of us in the business.
Right, premiums. You can definitely get premiums as a thank you. And actually, as a freebie right now, if you want, we'll send you a WAMC fan. You just have to choose it on the pledge form.
A fan?
Yes, like, not an electric fan.
No, not an electric fan, a hand fan.
Oh, like
to show
church.
That you are a WAMC fan. Exactly.
Can they still use those in church? I don't know.
Gosh,
you go to church more
often. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
And you can, of course, choose the baseball cap or the pint glass sets. But we've got the lockbox tote.
Okay,
which
now
this is
interesting.
And new.
This lockbox tote is made of space age polymers, right?
Yeah, it's 100% recycled soda bottles, water bottles, and food containers.
Now you're kidding me.
No, 100%.
Now presumably they wash them first, right?
I would think, yeah. Okay. There's a whole process.
But you don't believe in that stuff, Ray, do you?
What do you mean?
That whole recycling, climate change.
Now, why would you say
that?
Of course, recycling is an important thing.
Just because of things that you've said on the
past. We have our recycling bin at home, and it's always full
of beer cans.
No, you know I've been laying off but the Mets are playing the Yankees this weekend.
So
might have me at Oktoberfest. You know what I mean?
Right, and then what happens once it gets whisked away from your house? They clean them up, they break them down, and they build tote bags.
This is cool.
Do
you have one to show us?
We don't have a sample, but we do have a picture up on the pledge form that's a mock-up of what it's going to look like. It's a picture of the lockbox. It's a white canvas bag, and it's huge. It's a jumbo tote. It's 19 inches wide, 16 inches high, and a base of 4 inches. So you can fit a lot of groceries in there.
A lot of plastic bottles in that.
Even more plastic bottles. Right.
Fantastic.
And the long handles, too, so you can strap it over your shoulder, 25-inch handles.
Ooh.
So there is a mock-up if you want to see an approximation of what it's going to look like. We're going to get a real mock-up from the company and put that up there, too.
Terrific. So this is exciting stuff. The fund drive begins when?
October 5th, bright and early, 6 a.m.
Okay. And so everything counts on day one, minute one of the fund drive. The goal is to shorten this drive up. And every dollar we raise now counts right at the very beginning.
Right.
So go to WAMC.org, feed the lockbox. It is both metaphorical and now physical. There is actually
a lockbox. There is an actual box
with
in
a
the
lock
front
on
office.
It.
Yeah.
Amazing. Is there anything in it?
There is. Well, we've gotten about $95,000 in it.
It's in the lockbox?
Metaphorically in the lockbox.
It's virtually
in this world
in
of
the
electronic
lockbox.
Transfers. Some of it may be.
That's right. Some of it comes in. Not
all right. Because, you know, I did shake it, and I didn't feel much in there. All right. Felicia Burke, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Have a great panel.
Thanks a lot. Once again, WAMC.org is the web address, and we would love you to make your pledge at the lockbox right now while you listen to the panel. Oh, and what a panel we have. Well, yesterday we spent, Rosemary, you were here.
I was here.
And I know we try to blot these things out as soon as we're done. But we did discuss for about 45 minutes the three-hour epic GOP debate.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
So I thought we would give a little equal time here and mention that Bernie Sanders is on the cover of Time magazine this week. Ain't that something?
Hey, you know, he's making news.
He's certainly man of the week for Time.
Time
magazine.
Is all about news. What are they
going to
do?
Well, you know, they...
I prefer him to Trump on the cover.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a much nicer, as we say in Yiddish, punim to look at.
Really? Oh, you prefer him to Trump?
On the cover.
Oh,
of
I thought
Time
you said you prefer Trump on the cover.
Well, it's a pretty in-depth, and I haven't read it all. You passed it to us this morning, but it's a pretty in-depth look at his candidacy and all the dynamics of it. And it does put it in a lot of perspective, comparing it to other campaigns over the years, and talks to a lot of his supporters to try to get at that whole point of why people are flocking to these Bernie Sanders events.
He went to Liberty University last week.
Yes, he did.
We talked about this, and that was kind of a brave and very interesting encounter with people who think completely the opposite of him, as they said, a place where abortion is a sin and gay marriage is apostasy, and he goes in and says, let's start thinking about people.
It certainly takes a lot of guts to do that.
But, you know, the other part, the other flip of this is, you know, I think he's trying to talk to those folks about the need to care for people, regardless of these other issues, but that we need to take care of one another, that the greed is not the order of should not be the order of the day. And I think, you know, there is a fault line forming within the radical Christian right between the younger folks and the older folks. And some of the younger folks are like, not necessarily on abortion, but on gay stuff, they're sort of like, what's the big deal? I grew up with these people. They're my friends. Well, you know, you won't see it at Liberty, but you will see it in the greater Christian right community. And, you know, it's interesting that he's trying to capitalize a little bit on that.
I think that abortion is still very much on the national mind. We're seeing that now. We may end up shutting the government down over abortion.
Oh, absolutely.
Issues,
abortion is never going to go away. And now that marriage is settled, except for, of course, Kim Davis, abortion is going to be their focus from now until the time that they can make it illegal in this country, which is never going to happen. So it's always going to be the top of the agenda of the radical Christian right.
So Sanders made this appearance at Liberty University. His poll numbers, by the last polls that I saw, leading in New Hampshire, leading in Iowa, and you wonder what's going through the head. You know, Libby talked about the schism in the far right of the Republicans. It would appear to be that there is something of a schism in the far left of the Democrats, and it must petrify some of the hierarchy. There's an interesting part of this Time article, and it's a long article, and they point out, and I'll quote here, in 2003, the Sanders role was played by progressive Democrat Howard Dean, another Vermonter, who attracted huge crowds and an avid internet fan base, but failed to win a single nominating contest.
Right.
And I think that's an important point to remember as we go forward. We're still pretty early in the game.
You know, he might win New Hampshire because that's his backyard. Yes, it would be yet another blow to Clinton because I think she lost it the last time, too. But I don't see him being really able to keep the momentum going. He won't be the nominee because we will then lose the White House.
Well, she's ahead in nationwide polls by 20%.
Right.
But, you know, she was ahead at this point back in September of 2007, and Barack Obama was making a big come on. But it is different.
But they're not the same.
Yeah, it is different. I completely agree.
I think he's the Trump of the Democratic Party. He's getting a lot of attention right now, but he cannot go the distance. I just don't think he has the money. He certainly does. Calling himself a social democrat or a socialist is not going to play in this country.
Well, he's only been a Democrat since, what, April?
Yeah, I mean, he's got that same, like, Trump also switched.
Yeah.
The numbers are incredibly deceptive. These are early polls. Yeah. They're not very reliable. Hillary is still, she has definitely slipped. I wish that were not so, but I still think she's got this nomination sewed up. And then you also have to look at part of the Sanders campaign is to keep his name out. It's to yell at. We've heard some of that here, that we can't say we're not giving him enough attention. He's on the cover of Time. New York Times came under attack for not covering him enough either. And it's all baloney. He's getting lots and lots of coverage, probably more than if you were going to do it just on probability of getting in, you know, whether he deserves it. It's just part of the campaign. I admire it. But I don't think this is a revolution that they're calling
it. That's
what
he calls
it. I don't think it's a movement.
And I think that's the wrong thing to call it, to be quite honest with you, in this country, because that's not going to go over well.
We had a revolution. It went pretty well.
Yeah. In 1776, it was a while ago. Now when people think of revolution, they think of 1914 in Russia, or 1917. They think of 1941 in China. You know, it's not what they want to think about. There are social movements, and, you know, he is bringing up the left in a way that the left hasn't been brought up since Dean. And Dean really wasn't as strong with the left as Bernie Sanders is. But the left is not the mainstream of the party, and we can't win.
Was Howard Dean ever early on the cover of Time?
Oh, well. I cannot say for
sure.
I
think he had to scream before he had to get
a big national. He certainly got his attention after he screamed. But let me ask you, Hillary supporters, to my right, not politically to my right, to my left, I suppose. I don't know.
To your man.
To the left of Mao.
Don't you think that the Bernie Sanders success and the attention that he's getting has cracked open a path for others like Joe Biden to perhaps come onto the scene, and that dynamic might actually happen?
I think this is a lot of wishful thinking by Democrats who don't want Hillary, and she does have high dislike factors. We know that. So I think any sort of stumble, and things are interpreted as stumbles, mm-hmm. Bernie's rise, he's talking about things that we all care about and many of us have an interest in, even if we don't agree with him. So it's not unusual to me that he's getting attention.
Well,
but to see it as the end of Hillary, I just can't fathom it.
This might not be the end of Hillary, but I think you're absolutely right. It does open up a door for a new person who's not Hillary. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I want her to be the next president. I think she's smart. I think she can deal with foreign policy issues. I think she understands the economy and all the things that needs to happen. However, she's been damaged by this email thing. She didn't handle it as well as she could have. Bernie is, you know, saying we need change within the party. Now, whether people would see Joe Biden as change because he's been vice president for the last 8 years, the thing is he's a regular guy. Like, people felt they could have a beer with George Bush.
Yeah.
They feel like they could have a beer with Joe Biden.
Right, but politically, he's supported the banks. You know,
he's more centrist. Absolutely.
And if you look at his, you know, what he's done in the past, he wouldn't automatically win the support of Bernie Sanders.
Anybody who came in now is not Hillary. That's all it is.
Right.
That's what an unattractive candidate that is.
All right, let's take a quick
break. Democrats hurt themselves.
Take a quick break, and then we'll finish up this portion of the program. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York. Offering custom framing and new exhibits every first Friday, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. Watercolors by Edith Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Huntsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-huntsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
It's Roundtable on WAMC, 26 minutes after 9 o'clock. The Roundtable panel, Ray in for Joe, Libby, Rosemary, and Mike with us today. And we talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders, who's on the cover of Time this week. This email came in from Michael. How can you call Bernie the Trump of the Democratic Party? Trump is an ignorant, vulgar bully. Bernie's an intelligent gentleman. That's from Michael.
They both have extreme positions.
All right. You know, I think it's interesting that...
Well, then you can say that Bernie is the mirror image of all the Republican candidates.
Well, that's a good point.
I think it's interesting that the governor of New Hampshire and Vermont both supporting Hillary, especially in Vermont, where Shumlin, I think, is going to or just has done a little tour with Hillary around the state.
Well, she's tied up all the insider Democratic endorsements. I don't know how effective that is. But
well, I think it'll if she gets the nomination, it's because of the groundwork that she did to secure all of that you know, establishment support.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this from Peter who in New Paltz, who says, I think a lot of people vote their identity rather than policies. They want to know, is he or she one of us or one of them? So the fact that Bernie Sanders is a socialist will doom him. People who don't even know what that means still think it's terrible. That's
He actually is a social democrat, which is great. In Europe, mm-hmm. it's completely respectable. But in this country, you say that and people see communists.
Right. I think of Hugo Chavez. Yeah.
Right.
And I think there is some sort of subtext among Hillary partisans to actually make that direct comparison.
Link him to
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Alan isn't here, so we can talk about it more openly, but I think age is an issue.
He's 74.
Young people are not voting for us old guys. I know she's close.
He's
but
almost 5 years younger than Ronald Reagan was when Ronald Reagan ran for president. So
Ronald Reagan
issue.
Didn't win on young votes, though, and Barack Obama did. Our voting demographic has changed.
Interesting. And this from and we're wrapping up here the first half hour of the program. This from James. The assumption at the round table today is that to centrists, candidates will end up competing. Two centrists candidates will end up competing for the presidency. What if the American politic decides that the likes of Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are to be the two dominant party's candidates? Well, that's what we're talking about today.
That's why the topic is so fascinating, because that does seem like, whoa, it could happen.
We're all buying one-way tickets to somewhere.
Doesn't it seem, though, that there is an undercurrent among a large portion of at least those focused on by the media, that there's a large portion that say enough with the status quo?
Oh, yeah.
That's what happened in 1972. Well, McGovern was able to get the nomination. He was regarded as really far left and portrayed that way and did dismally in the general election. But now if you have two parties that nominate extremes, that'll be an interesting situation.
Mm-hmm. No, what I meant was focused on by the media, that there is a certain amount of throw out all the old bums, bring in the new bums. It's 9:29. It's the roundtable panel. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Mike Spain, Rosemary Omeo, and Libby Post with us. We'll be back after news. I like it. It's the roundtable on WAMC, 9:33, beautiful Friday morning. We've had a nice weather week, and it's great to have everybody here today. Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo whispering among themselves. Mike Spain is here acting very, very, he's well-behaved today. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. All right, we'll try to blast through a few of the emails, and then we'll move on to next topic. This one is from Bruno. Bernie's not an extremist. If he was a Marxist-Leninist, I would understand your contention. Unfortunately, he's going nowhere, since Americans are stigmatized with the C, communism, and S, socialism words. No matter how you position yourself on the political spectrum, you are all afraid of socialism due to decades of brainwashing from your greedy and empirical establishment. That's from Bruno. The guy read, I mean, it's if you read the Times article, he grew up reading Marx. I mean, he's certainly not ashamed of that fact.
He's a red diaper baby. I mean,
he grew up on off Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn. You know?
Right, where all the commies are.
Well, look, I grew up with it, too.
Before Park Slope overtook it. Right?
Yeah, I grew up with it, too. You know?
You can't be elected president either.
I know, but I have a brother who is a socialist. I mean, you know, he's a Brooklyn Jew from a time when unions were really strong.
Right.
And
he
grew up in that whole thing. I bet you he went to some of the, you know, the camps and summer camps.
This area, the capital region, has a rich socialist history. Yeah. In the early 1900s, Schenectady had a socialist mayor. I mean, because unions were strong.
Right.
General Electric was thriving.
I'm envisioning Iowans and Wyomings listening to this.
Yeah, but you know what? Back then,
we don't have a transmitter there yet, but you know.
In the Depression,
a repeater.
They were all on our side. During the Depression, those folks understood that people with money were keeping them down. Yeah. And now,
as our listeners keep
pointing out. That's right, but everybody turned on
them
in the 50s.
That's true. It's true.
As our listeners keep pointing out, we are all bleeding heart liberals.
We are.
Of course we get it. But in discussing these things, you have to acknowledge that there's a whole breadth of this country who doesn't get it at all. And what they do understand, they don't like.
Who are all bleeding heart liberals?
this panel.
Yeah, I wondered. I wondered.
Except you, of course.
This one from, I'm centrist. This one from Tom. Good morning, Roundtable. I'm confused by your definition of extreme. I haven't seen or heard Bernie making fun of anyone's looks or bad migrants and immigrants.
Oh, he's not a jerk. Nobody can say he's a jerk.
Tom goes on, or what a jerk Hillary might be. How is he extreme, anything like Trump? But I think there are different types of extreme.
Yeah, exactly.
He's talking about things like the richest 15 people making billions of dollars that nobody really wants to talk about and do anything about because it's too scary.
And you Trump know, is extreme talking, within we, Republican philosophy. He wants to cut capital gains or make hedge fund dealers
pay taxes.
Right. This is definitely extreme in the Republican world.
It's funny. Now, putting Trump and Bernie in the same sentence has really struck a chord with our listeners who say, you know, how can you put Trump and Sanders in the same extreme category? There's another one that just came in.
These are not regular routine to be expected candidacies. They just are not. And they do belong in the same sentence. Not to say that their personalities, their effectiveness, anything like that is the same.
Or their political position.
Right. That's
but, you know, the Time article made it clear that social media has totally changed how we are doing politics now.
Right.
It's not the same old, same old. It's not just dominating the airwaves with good commercials. There's all of this other stuff going on. And so people like a Trump and like a Bernie Sanders can build up this base of support, but it'll only go so far.
This one from Jim. Interesting that you consider income equality, paid maternity leave, universal health care, etc., extreme. Mm-hmm. So there's a common thing.
Boy, I wish they weren't extreme, but we don't have them here.
All right.
They are extreme positions. So is minimum wage, for that matter, in the United States.
Decent minimum wage. Livable.
Decent minimum, exactly.
Anthony takes Rosemary to task here. Rosemary, the one-sided conversation this morning is a little odd. Bernie is popular because Hillary is the corporate candidate. Young people are not happy with the corporate nature of our government. They are not going to back Hillary unless she comes out in favor of programs that support middle-class families who are watching their children struggle with student loans. They do not have the income to help. Hillary was co-president when her husband created the banking nightmare that gave us 2008. We all know this.
Oh, my gosh.
No.
Clinton created... Oh,
that's from
dear.
Anthony.
Anthony. I actually would like to see some evidence that young people are going to be involved in the election at all. I think it was a fluke that they were in Obama. They've been disappointed. And I'm not seeing a whole lot of excitement for any candidate by young people. Do you? Am I wrong on that?
Well, I would say
Bernie
that
a little bit.
Bernie does capture young, idealistic people. Yeah.
All right, we'll move on here.
Not to the extent Obama did in 08. No way.
No, okay. Yeah.
I'll give Andrew in Goshen the last word. Why do you want Hillary to win if she comes from a background of exactly what we are trying to escape in this country? What's wrong with Bernie's grand ideas, whether the country likes it or not?
I love grand ideas, but Obama had them too, and it's very difficult to get them through the Congress and the system we have. Hillary knows how to do that. She is an effective governor.
And I will just say this. The U.S. Supreme Court.
Good point.
That's
hard to argue with.
Did you see, I don't know if you guys got through the entire Time article, but at one point Bernie sort of says, well, President Obama's big mistake was he ran on the grand ideals, and then the day he got in office said, okay, thanks for all your populist help.
Yeah, I'll take it from here. That's a really good observation. He did.
It's 9:39, and you can continue to email. We'll try to avoid now going through this. Anymore, this topic, and we'll move on
to
interest rates. The Federal Reserve is keeping U.S. interest rates at a record low in the face of threats from a weak global economy, persistently low inflation, and unstable financial markets. Wrapping up a closely watched meeting, Fed officials said that while the U.S. job market is solid, recent global developments may restrain economic activity and further drag down already low inflation. Signs of a sharp slowdown in China have intensified fears among investors about the U.S. and global economy. Low oil prices and a high-priced dollar have kept inflation undesirably muted, according to the Associated Press.
This was such a good move, and I said repeatedly I couldn't understand why they wouldn't just hold off. They have a chance in a little more than 2 months to consider a rate hike then if everything stays stable. What did they lose by holding off?
Yes, it's important to understand that they're trying to regulate the monetary system, which is extremely difficult. It's almost going to Las Vegas and trying to manage your bets. If they raise interest rates too much or anything, it could have a negative impact on the economy. But if they leave them so low, it could create a spiral of deflation, which could be extremely bad for the economy. So they're trying to balance that. And they are recognizing the world markets, China's own instability, and the ongoing recession in Europe. The U.S. itself, though, is doing pretty well. They don't want to mess with that, but they don't want to let it stagnate either. I mean, it is a difficult thing. And politically, raising the interest rates now would be very difficult.
Skeptics predicted that they would never raise the rates anyway. Skeptics, some would say, the minute they raise rates, there is so much debt out there, everything's going to go to hell.
Right,
but it might mean that some people get a better return on their investment, and some people might actually have to be receive raises. You know, that's the kind of thing that doesn't happen when you have stagnation like this.
And also, you know, the Fed never considered like a 5% hike. We're talking 1%. About a 0.25%.
It's more psychological. And there is, and the cynics might have a point. By even having the ability to raise the rates, just by not raising them, the stock market went up.
That's right.
And then
that's
it went down. But the thing is that the idea that there's all this debt out there and if they raise the rates, the credit card companies are still charging usury
16%,
you know, interest rates. So it's not like, all, you know, if we ticked up the interest rates a little bit, you know, then it just gives them an opportunity to jack it up even more. They're making plenty of money. Yeah.
But home mortgages would likely go up if they raise interest rates a little bit.
You know, it's time to refinance.
They are actually, at least now, saying maybe October, late October.
But there are two more chances this year.
Yeah, they have October and then December. So, as I say, a little more than 2 months, they're going to have chances again.
So we shall see. And I guess it all depends now on how China holds up, and we will find out. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. We'll take a short break, and then we'll find out what's cooking in the Times Union.
Support for WAMC comes from the Blue Marble, a world of gifts in Amherst, Massachusetts, featuring hand-selected jewelry from over 40 artists, including local, Native American, and fairly traded work, thebluemarble.biz. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, custom design panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly, passive, and solar design elements, noble-home.net. And Old Stone Fort Museum, Schoharie, New York, presenting Stone Fort Days, a Revolutionary War living history event with over 100 soldiers and civilians October 3rd and 4th, theoldstonefort.org.
Okay, Rob Chacon hits another home run with the bumper music, Fats Domino, today. You don't hear Fats Domino on the radio very often, and even more rarely on public radio. So nice work there, Mr. Engineer. It's the Roundtable panel on a Friday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Libby and Mike still with us. Rosemary left the building. Much like Elvis, Rosemary is now gone. It is 9:44, and the Times Union, a fine paper. Since the Knickerbocker News left, it's the best
in 1988, right?
That's
Let's just remember.
I miss
it's been a while.
The Nick News.
Yeah.
I just want to put that out there. I thought it was great.
No more than I.
Associate Editor Mike Spain, what's new in the paper today?
Well, you know, the our story by Rob Gavin, our court reporter today, looks back again at that unusual case from last week that emerged with a 43-second video involving a quote-unquote busker. That's a street performer.
Yeah.
I hadn't really understood that term until recently. But anyways, this busker, his name is Life Solem, and he's from New York City, and he was playing his guitar along Pearl Street in Albany and had a shirt laying down on the sidewalk in front of them, and people were throwing coins and maybe a few paper currencies into it. And a police officer, an Albany police officer, came by on a bicycle and told him that he needed to go to City Hall and get a permit. And you could not do a street performance like this without a permit. And his girlfriend was there, the performer's girlfriend, not the policeman's, and opened up her smartphone and started capturing this on video. Put a 43-second video up on YouTube that shows the performer in the exchange with the police officer. The police officer said, go down to City Hall, see the clerk, they'll explain everything to you, First Amendment or nothing. And, you know, with that, he called for extra help from authorities, the police officer did, saying that he had, you know, unruly
disorderly conduct,
disorderly street performers. And, you know, they came out. Anyway, he was charged with disorderly conduct. The performer was. He got his day in court, and the district attorney who was assigned to the case went up to the judge, the city court judge, Rachel Krester, and said that David Soares is declining to prosecute this case. And Krester dropped the charges against the street performer and let him go. And he said he was happy about it. He doesn't plan to put on, you know, to go after the police department or anything like that. He said he's been able to do this kind of street performance all over the world and hasn't had the problems that he's had here in Albany. As for the police officer, he was assigned to administrative duty. He's off the patrols right now while the police department conducts an internal affairs investigation of his activities and sees if there's any disciplinary action warranted.
Now, what would possibly warrant disciplinary action there?
Well, essentially, an officer went to enforce something that didn't exist and told a citizen that he was required to adhere to a rule that was not in place. That is, you need to go get a permit from City Hall if you're going to continue to perform in the street. Albany doesn't require that.
Yeah.
It's unusual. And then he went to grab the cell phone from the woman who was taking the video. And you know, it looks like he may have overreacted. I don't know that he did anything awful. In these confrontations that have been videotaped between police and citizens in the last year, this is really, really minor. But it does demonstrate that there are questions about the way police sort of interact with citizens, and this one at least raised questions. There's an investigation going on, and whether there's any disciplinary action, we will wait and see. We might not even find out about it.
It certainly struck a chord. The video...
Yeah.
I don't know if you can consider it viral, but it went pretty far. Yeah.
Yeah. It certainly in this market, it wasn't favorable for the Albany Police Department. It certainly portrayed a police officer who wasn't street friendly, so to speak. And he was an officer on a bicycle, so that is his normal assignment. But he hasn't, he's still working, still being paid. He's just not out on patrol while the Internal Affairs Department, investigates it.
Okay. Well, anything more you have to say about that, Libby?
It was just stupid, really. It was just a bad judgment on behalf of the police officer. I mean, any police officer at this point, when a phone is being pointed at you to do what he did and it all gets captured, and you think, unless he's going to take the phone and stomp it on the ground and break it, do you think it's not going to end up on YouTube?
Well, you have to be smart.
But the other issue in all of these cases, and I have no knowledge of anything that happened before the video went on, you know, before the 43-second video began, you don't know what was exchanged between them. It appears that nothing was exchanged.
Right.
But, you know, we don't know that.
Well, he wasn't roughed up. It's certainly not.
His First Amendment rights were trampled on, some people might say. And I think that's legitimate when you say that you can't do what you're doing in the street here. And the officer referenced, you know, blocking the street. It was about a 25-foot wide sidewalk, and he was taking up about 3 feet.
It was on Pearl Street where nobody's hanging out. The other part of this is that he didn't know city regulations. He didn't know city law. And that's very disturbing.
Seemed to unilaterally create a rule.
Well, there could be that.
You don't know all the details, but right now it certainly is non-favorable. But it was not grotesque, you know, police abuse. It was more like a dumb. An unfortunate... circumstance.
And that's why I find it so interesting that this thing became so, the news of this became so widespread. And we've had emails about this over the last couple of days. When will you talk about this? So it has struck a chord with
some. Well, the case has been dropped. The performer faces no charges, and he does not, he told our reporter yesterday, he does not intend to pursue any action against the police. So it's really just up to the police whether they're going to send the officer for additional training or maybe reassign him or admonish him or do nothing. You know, and that's up to the police department to, certainly expect something will happen. At least there's been some discussion already about how to handle cases like this.
What exactly did the officer do wrong?
He essentially stopped a person or attempted to stop a person from doing street performance. The guy had a guitar. He was singing folk songs, trying to collect a little money, and asserted that that was a violation, and he needed a permit in the city of Albany to do so. In fact, you don't.
Okay.
There is no law that requires that.
All right. So this is not the Lindbergh baby case.
Oh, absolutely not. This is not violence. This is not anyone being roughed up, unless you think grabbing the cell phone was a hint of that. But what it does is it just shows you that, I think Libby put it perfectly, don't police know that people have these cell phones and that it's going to go on the internet?
You know, have you not watched the last year and a half? St. Louis, Missouri, I mean, you know, down south, the guy who got shot.
You'd hate to
compare
any of that
to this, but
it demonstrates the power of social media, YouTube, handheld video cameras.
Well, the busker certainly has his moment of fame.
Yes, he does. 15 minutes, maybe a little.
He got his 15 minutes, now it goes back to normal, as Rob Gavin, our reporter, put it in his story.
What else is in the TU today, Mike?
Interesting story, a glimpse into the secret world of the computer chip companies and Apple computers. And its rival Samsung and iPhones and Galaxy phones, etc. And it hits home with us with a story by our technology reporter, Larry Rulison, who follows all the trade magazines and all the trade publications and websites that look deeply into this. And he has sources himself. And the story today is that it looks like Apple will not be having its iPhone chips manufactured here in Saratoga County at the huge Global Foundries plant. It looks like that. Nobody speaks on the record, but it looks like a Taiwan semiconductor company has won the contract for this. A lot has to do with the intricacies where Apple is challenging Samsung in court over copyright and patent violations and their arch enemies for the sale of their competing phones, and yet Apple contracts with Samsung to have Samsung build chips to the iPhone, and they're dependent on them. And all of this is kind of behind the scenes. But what it does give you a glimpse of is that in recent months, Global Foundries, which has the chip plant in Saratoga County, kind of backed off the planning and the development that goes into building a second factory up there. The time isn't right. They were about to do it. Now, remember, they expect to employ 3,900 people by the end of this year there.
How many are they employing?
I think about 3,000 now, so it's at the beginning of 2015. So they're still hiring. And yet, they took over a lot of the manufacturing that IBM had given up when earlier this year. And now Global Foundries is offering buyouts around all of its properties. Some insiders say that's to sort of shed the extra employees they picked up when they took over IBM, but it is offered to people here in Saratoga County. So there's questions about how it's going in Saratoga County. There's issues about what percentage of the chips they manufacture have faults in them. That's a common issue with only half the chips usually end up being tested appropriately to work. And, you know, But our story today does give you this kind of insight as to all the ins and outs of a very complicated world economy around these little devices that we all carry in our pockets and capture buskers on our cell phones with.
Yeah, right. It's all the stuff that's being made up there that's giving us the ability to do that. You know, it did say in that article that was in the TU, you know, that it was that Taiwan-based papers that said that other company was getting 100%. And then other people said, well, maybe not. Maybe it's
that's
only 50%.
There's speculation Apple is trying to split it up and have other places and find other ways to manufacture.
But I can
chips.
Understand why Apple wouldn't want to do business with Samsung.
Of course not. You know. They're enormous rivals.
Yeah.
And Apple has accused Samsung with considerable evidence, and the federal courts in San Francisco have agreed that they have pretty much ripped off a lot of their technology.
Well, there was a great piece in Vanity Fair last year.
About a year ago.
That really detailed all of that. Every time Apple comes out with a product, Samsung comes out with Apple Lite kind of products and changes a few things and has, of course, a different logo and they market it and they're making a lot of money.
And their sale of Galaxy phones is rivaling the iPhone 6. There's a Galaxy 6. They're even naming them similarly. And, one of the outcomes of it is that you get a lot of competition and I suppose a lot of pressure to add enhancements to these little devices we carry around in our pockets. And you could argue that maybe we all benefit from it a little bit, but it is fascinating to watch these superpower companies and the billions and billions of dollars and transactions that go on, and the fact that they rely on Samsung relies on the income it gets from Apple to be able to compete with Apple.
Right. That's what's so bizarre here. And the fact that these billion-dollar companies, these two major players, is actually may have an impact on the Capital Region.
Well, I think that is what I find a little nerve-wracking, the tenuous nature of this. Now, this is a huge undertaking, the chip fab, and many jobs, and it was a huge infrastructure upgrade, tax breaks, and at the whim of a market 10,000 miles away, mm-hmm. jobs can be lost.
Yes, that's exactly right, and a lot of what goes on at the global level really hits home here with the chip factory that is in Walta in Saratoga County. So it mm-hmm. is everything global is local these days.
So the Times Union has a website, I'm told.
Yes, that's timesunion.com.
Timesunion.com.
Yes.
Is there a KnickerbockerNews.com?
No, there. Well, you know, you should check it out.
We've got to bring that back. The afternoon paper is just.
It is something.
I know papers aren't all doing that well across the country, but the afternoon paper in Albany, I always look forward to that.
Well, we're an all-day news source now because of the internet, and delivering a printed newspaper late in the day to someone's home wasn't competitive in the 80s. I don't know that it would become competitive today.
I don't know, Mike. I harken back to the old days. The milkman came and brought the
get
milk.
Over it, Ray.
You
get
still a little of that around.
House
isn't
call from the doctor. The Knickerbocker News showed up. You read the paper. What happened to America?
I really love the Nick News.
I'm starting to hear this 50s paper. Music playing in the background.
Yeah. Yes, leave it
on the RCA.
Leave it to Beaver. All right, let's read
this. What you could always bank on the Nick News is to be a little more left of center than the Times Union was.
Oh, really?
It was a balance.
Yes.
I was a kid, so I don't recall.
The Nick definitely had a more progressive point of view.
It
than
absolutely
the Times
had a more progressive
right.
point of
but
view.
But you have to know that when the Knickerbocker News folded in 1988, all of its staff became part of the Times Union. Mm-hmm. And for years, the leadership of the Times Union was, the masthead was loaded with people from the Knickerbocker News. So it was a nice merger that mm-hmm. created the best of both newspapers.
And your Barney Fowler, your High Rose, and all those
were
the days.
Those were the days. And they were great people, and they're gone now, but there's still great people working there producing.
Is Rex Smith still working over there?
Yes. Rex remains the editor.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
So, and then you work over there and some others.
Oh, yeah. You know, we have photographers like Skip Dickstein, who just got through a great Saratoga season. We get great technology writers like Larry Rulison and columnists like Chris Churchill and Jen Gish. And Fred LeBrun still writes for us.
Ah, good old Fred.
And then we have Paul Grondahl.
Right. I mean, you know.
It's pretty good.
Who,
note
by the
self.
Way, is donating his papers to the Albany Public Library. And there's an event, I think it's this coming Monday. Hold on for one moment.
All right. Well, you have only 12 seconds.
12 seconds. Okay. So he's donating his papers to Albany Public, you know, all the papers that he did.
Well, he wrote the definitive book on Erastus Corning II, mayor of Albany for 43 years, who died in 1983, and Paul
and
is the
great,
expert on that, and just spoke the other night at the Egg about that.
Yeah, so
book,
that event's on the 29th at the main branch in the local history room.
All right, we're all
it's
done.
A donor appreciation event.
Thank you very much for
You're
that
welcome.
Plug, and Mike Spain, good luck at the Knickerbocker News. We appreciate everybody listening in. Roundtable at WAMC.org, hour two on the way.